Moto America fans, it's time for another episode of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you may even learn something from this unlikely pair and their special guest. The mic is yours, Paul and Sean.
All right, guys, we're here for another episode of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. I'm Paul Carruthers. That's Sean Bice. And this guy down here is I'm bombarded by Sean's. We've got Sean Dillon Kelly.
We got the Sean's back.
The Sean's are back. Okay.
Reunited.
So Sean and I talked earlier and we were trying to figure out how long it's been since he's been on the show. So I looked it up and ironically enough, he was on the show in December 14th. And today's December 15th, and he was, but it was 2019. So,
oh my God,
4 years.
That's ridiculous.
That's crazy.
I mean,
that was indifferent. He might have had long, still had long hair then.
No, he didn't.
Dillon Kelly.
He didn't.
I didn't. No,
he never had long hair at Moto America.
Thank you. That, you know your facts. Yeah. You would have remembered that.
Yeah. I would have remembered. It would look
that
like
Jake. That is crazy that we're only off by a day for 4 years. That's
isn't that
crazy.
Wild?
I know. That's crazy. And I didn't think it had been that long. So let's start. I mean, your life now compared to 2019 is drastically different. But first of all, let's get started with this because we're excited. Moto America is excited as a group. And our fans, I can tell, are excited. Yesterday, we got to make the announcement that you're going to be racing in Moto America, not only in Moto America, but Moto America Steel Commander Superbike, which is like the premier class, right? So we're stoked on that. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, did it come as a surprise to you? Did you know, how long has this been going on?
Yeah, well, if you guys are excited, imagine how excited I am. It's so nice. I mean, obviously there's so much to talk about, which I'm sure we'll hit in a bunch of topics, in this podcast, but, it feels good after the last 5 months, it feels good to finally have this cleared up and just know that I have a good deal, that I'm coming back home, that I'm going to the highest class of the States is amazing. And that I've got the package that I've got. So I'm excited. I'm very excited. This has been going on. Honestly, I signed the contract maybe 3 weeks ago now. So it's been signed for a little while. And I think, you know, they were just trying to organize, like I wasn't home until last week from being overseas and they didn't want to make an announcement, but even me, I was like, guys, like I want to be there. I want to, you know, do it the right way. I don't want to just announce, you know, me being in Spain, not even taking a picture yet that I'm coming. So, and then also they wanted to, you know, get things worked out. And I'm glad that we at least waited to do, you know, we'd made the video, we made some nice pictures and, I'm happy that we finally announced it because people were already talking a lot. So I'm glad that we finally got it out and the response has been amazing. You know, it's been exactly 24 hours since I announced and the response has been incredible. So, I'm super excited for this.
So I got to say a couple things here. First of all, well, Sean, so since you've been gone, there have been some people, I mean, they walk up to me and they say, hey, Sean, and I talk to them and they go, oh, wait, we met the other Sean. So I grew a beard so that they would know. I mean,
oh yeah, that's
why they get it confused.
That's like the only way I could tell. I didn't even think about it that way.
I love it.
I thought the glasses would be enough, but no, I had to grow the beards. But hey, I want to ask you, Sean. So I heard about this a little while ago, and I know the team because last year, and I'm going to mispronounce his last name, so you can help me. Alex, is it Arango? Or Arango? It's Arango?
Yeah. I mean, if he says it a different way, then I don't know what to tell
him. he's never said it to me, but I know he and Agustin Sierra both raced last year in our series in Stock 1000. And at one point, Alex actually reached out to me and said, it's kind of like, in a polite way, how about a little love for our team? And it's something we struggle with because, you know, we talk to the teams that are, you know, a little bit higher up in the standings and so I felt really bad. And So now that you're joining the team, we're talking to a member of his team, but I still haven't talked to him yet. So Alex, I apologize.
And we will get him. We will get him on. He deserves, yeah, he deserves to be on just for the,
he does.
I mean, they made a huge step.
I'm just letting you know now, knowing Alex, he's going to struggle big time in front of this camera right here.
Really?
Oh man, I can't wait. I can't wait for him to see this. He's going to say something for sure. But yeah, he's a little camera shy.
Well, okay. We'll change that.
Yeah, and I'm glad he reached out to me because, you know, I knew I had seen him because I always go through the entry list and we saw him. And I know it was the last couple of rounds of this past season, he was part of us. And I saw that when JD tested the Titler's bike down at Homestead, Alex, I believe, was there. There's a photo of him with JD, I think. Yep. And the other thing I saw is Alpha Racing's pretty good with their social media. And I know they're building the bike, and that's going to be a weapon because we know Cameron Beaubier and PJ and even Corey Alexander getting a podium. I mean, those bikes that they build are pretty solid stuff. So you're probably pretty psyched that not only is it that M1000R, but it's an Alpha Racing built or tuned or whatever built bike that it is. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that because like I said, this has been going on the talks have been with Alex and with the team has been going on for way more than 3 weeks, as you can imagine. But once I already knew that this was happening, I was still doing the last couple of races of Moto 2. And, you know, being in the paddock, you meet so many people. There's, you know, yeah, you just meet a bunch of people, a bunch of connections. And I actually ended up meeting totally by accident, but I ended up meeting the owner of Alpha while in Valencia in the last round. And that led to, you know, obviously us speaking, and he knew a little bit about what was going on. I told him what was going on, and he was like, "Hey, when are you flying back to the States?" And I was like, "Well, 10 days from now." And he was like, "Why don't you come to the workshop in Germany?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Like, let's do it." And then I ended up going to the workshop just 3 days before flying back to the States. So I went out to Germany, I went out for what was a one day, and then I ended up staying for 3 days because there was a snowstorm and I got stuck there. So that was a little bit of an adventure right before coming home. But I went to the workshop, met the Alpha guys, saw the bike that was being built, spent time there and met the engineers. Which, you know, we're going to have an engineer as well. So it was a really, really good time. I'm really glad I got to do that because, it was a great way to, you know, kind of start this relationship. At the end, you know, of course I signed with Top Pro, but they have a partnership with BMW and with Alpha. So for me to be able to do that, I think was amazing. And also just see how legit that bike is. So yeah, I think it's going to be great.
So this is going to be a big step, right? I mean, the electronics and all that stuff. It's like, I think is it harder? It's going to be more difficult or different going from Moto 2 to Superbike than it was Super Sport to Moto 2, or is that not true?
It depends.
I'm not talking about the competition. I'm talking about the bike.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course. It depends because you can't get much harder than Moto 2 World Championship.
No. You're not going to be battling for 20th at Moto America.
But in terms of bike step, I can't even answer that because I was expecting the Super Sport and the Moto 2 to be a bit more similar, and turns out they weren't whatsoever. The Moto 2, it's a completely different bike, completely different breed. For sure, the Superbike will be its own breed, its own step, its own machine, and I think the electronics will be one of the biggest things. I actually rode a stock 1000 last Sunday, an Alpha built stock 1000, Alex's bike. Actually, I rode it in Homestead. And so I started to get my feet wet with the big bike, with electronics, and just start understanding how it works. So it was really interesting. I'm glad I'm starting to do this already because I need, you know, I'm very used to having myself and the bike. And if let's say that if you have a relationship with the bike, it's you and the bike, right? You are speaking to the bike. You have that direct connection. You're communicating with it. And now with electronics, at least this is just my feeling after riding one day, you know, with this Stock 1000 is I've got electronics. It's like having a person in between and you have to speak with that person. And then that person speaks with the bike, right? You have that in between that it was, you know, it went a little bit better than I expected. Like I was expecting it to be like, catch me a bit more off guard, but I think just that bike is, you know, okay. I haven't ridden a super bike, so that's going to be a completely different story. Cause engine, chassis, swing arm, suspension, electronics, that is still going to be much different with the super bike, but, it still wasn't as crazy as I thought. But I still have a lot to learn, you know, to have that in between and just trusting that you can open completely and there's going to be something there stopping you. So, but yeah, it was a great way to start getting my feet wet with this new bike.
Okay.
Go ahead, Paul.
We have to talk about Moto 2 as much as yeah. I don't even like talking about it. I can imagine you don't like talking about it. I think maybe what helped you is the fact that we all saw, based on Cameron Beaubier's results in Moto 2, that I think if those of us who didn't really know how hard it was, I think suddenly we got the punch in the stomach to tell us like, this shit's hard, right? So I think that might have eased a little bit, because it's frustrating, and it must be frustrating for you when people just think, oh, you know, Sean Dillon Kelly's no good. Well, they pretty much know that Cameron Beaubier is good. So it had to have eased it a little bit. Am I right in thinking that way?
So a couple of things to comment. I mean, number one is I have no problem talking about Moto 2 because it was one of the best experiences of my life. It was a dream come true for me to get into Moto 2 World Championship. And, you know, yeah, there's people that are talking this and talking that, but I have zero problem to talk about what I did and how I did. I'm really proud of everything because as difficult as it was and as challenging as it was and as everything that got thrown towards me, I gave everything I had and I feel like I came out stronger, better, smarter, faster. So why would I have any shame to talk about it, right? You know, the only shame that there is the people that are talking, saying X, Y, and Z, but I have no problem for that because people have no idea. So, I don't care, right? At the end, if you're not in that paddock, if you're not there, if you're not seeing what's going on, people just don't know. So I'm fine with that. I know people are always going to have an opinion. People are always going to talk. And so what am I going to say, right? Only I know what I experienced. And like I said, yeah, very challenging, but I'm extremely grateful for everything that I learned. And I went around the world racing motorcycles. Like, how cool is that? Right.
Very
and
cool.
Yeah. There was more, you know, there was harder days than there were good days, but sometimes that's how it is. You know, I've got 2 years of Moto 2 World Championship in my pocket and I'm only 21. So I think this is, right. You know, I think that there's no better, learning experience than that for what I hope is going to be still a long year ahead of me or a long career ahead of me. But yeah, you know, in terms of the specifics now, there's a lot to talk about, but I think that answered your questions there.
It did. Thank you.
Well, yeah. And Sean, you know, you touched on it earlier. We thought like you did, we said, oh, he was in super sport. He doesn't have to unlearn the electronics of superbike like Cameron did. So we thought it's going to be a little more relative, the weight of the bike, the displacement of the bike. We thought the same thing you did. And you know, obviously it's hard for everybody. And it's so close together that it doesn't take hardly anything to go be from down in, I don't know, 15th to 20th, but up in the top 10 or something. I mean, the differential there is so small. I don't even understand it, how it can be such, you know, tenths of, you know, milliseconds, I guess. So what is the thing about Moto 2 and about those bikes? What's the hardest thing about them? Is it the frame being so stiff? Is it the front end? What is it?
So I think it's a combination of things. Number one is the bike is definitely very unique. It's the stiffest bike I think you'll ever ride. I mean, I've never ridden a MotoGP bike, but I think the Moto2 is the as stiff as you can get, which means it's very difficult to understand and to truly feel. Very, very fun bike. So it's great if you're, you know, you're riding around and man, you feel like you're hauling ass, but there's still going to be those, you know, 10, 15 guys ahead of you that are going half a second faster than you. So they're constantly finding something. And I think what makes it such a tough class as well is that all the engines are the same. So there is, you know, it comes down to details. And because the bikes are so similar, that means that the people around you make a difference, because your mind is everything on track there. You know, like if everyone's talented and everyone has the same bike, then what's going to make the difference, right? It's your atmosphere and what's in here. So if there's one little thing missing, it's going to be noticeable. And the other thing is like, man, you know, sometimes I was like, how you're just saying, it's so close. You know, sometimes I was, you know, I was P18, P20 out of 30 guys, which, yeah, it's not great. You know, doesn't look great. Doesn't sound great whatsoever, but you're only sometimes even 9/10 off of the all time lap record that they just broke that very morning, you know? Right. And it's like, man, 9/10 of a second, there's 20 guys off the lap record of the best in the world. But yeah, you know, you just see P20 and you're like, yep, man, just P20. Yeah. But that's just how this game works, right? This game is based off results. So if you're 20th, no one's looking at you. And sometimes, man, I felt like I was riding the absolute best I've ever ridden and just flowing and just feeling amazing. And then you go by and you see, you know, P22 and you're just like, wow, man, this is not easy. But again, I still feel like I wasn't able to really, I wouldn't even say adapt the way I wanted to, but I don't feel like I finished growing on that bike in that class. You know, let's say realistically, I got a season and a half before the issues that I had this year, and a season and a half is, you know, it's not a whole lot, you know, like, everyone talks about my super sport season, but I didn't win super sport until my third year. Right. I was fighting for the title my second year and I won a race my first year. Sure. But a season and a half into Moto 2 is, I think it's not enough for anybody. You know, you look at, don't talk about Pedro and these guys, but you talk a lot about a lot of the guys that have been here for years, you know, Dixon, Lowe's, even Joe. You look at all these guys and they've been here for how many years have they been there, you know? But again, it is what it is. I wouldn't even, you know, I'm not going to say that that's a problem or an excuse. It's just the way it had to go. And I'm super grateful for now, for the new opportunity, this new chapter and for everything I learned from the last 2 years.
Did you want another year or were you over it?
I would have loved another year if it was the right situation, the right deal, the right package, the right people, the right everything, but it wasn't there. So I'm not going to stress about that.
Right.
But yeah, I wouldn't say I was done with it, because I wasn't at all. It was just a really hard last three, four months that I've had. Really, really, really hard. Like just with everything that I had going on, it was tough. But yeah, you know, we got what we got and I'm back home now.
Is all the physical problems that you had this year, are they gone?
Stronger than vinegar. So I'm good.
You're good. All right.
I'm good. Yeah. It was hard with having to get that second surgery on my arm mid-season, in the summer break. And, you know, obviously it ended up causing a kind of a domino effect to everything. And it wasn't easy, but you know, I'm glad that, you know, I look back at where I was in July this year, and I'll be completely honest. I at one point I thought that I wasn't going to be able to race again. Like, it was that serious of a problem with my arm. The doctors in the MotoGP doctors, looked at me the Aston weekend right before the summer break. And well, here, I'll backtrack a little bit, because not many people know really exactly what happened with the whole arm. And so I'll explain it now that we're just talking about it. I had my first arm pump surgery on both arms in November after the season last year. I got the surgery, normal arm pump surgery, nothing special, but I had some arm pump during the season. So I just figured that it'd be the right time. I got the surgery and, you know, did my normal preseason, you know, December, January preseason. And I thought I felt okay, but I already starting January, like end of January, February, right before heading back to Spain this year, I started to feel some sort of arm pump coming back, but it wasn't as severe as before. So I was like, okay, I didn't think too much of it because, you know, I had surgery for it. So why stress about it? I started the season and, you know, some track I was completely fine. And then some track it was bad. My first bad weekend was COTA, which really sucked because it was home GP. I wanted to do well, and I was struggling a lot with my arm. It is one of the most physical tracks, so it was a little bit expected. But again, considering I got surgery, I shouldn't have that problem. So I got it really bad in COTA, tried working it out, continued, and then I got it really bad in Mugello, and then I got it bad in Jerez, and then I got it bad in I don't know what other track, and it was just getting worse and worse and worse. And of course, Moto 2 has a lot of races, a lot of back to backs. And so I was, you know, and in between races, I'm always training. So I was, you know, I kept on adding workload, but at the same time, I knew that I was not feeling great. So I started to try to take more care, not more care. I always trying to, you know, take care of myself with my recovery and with my physical training and everything. But something was up, and I planned myself out to stop in the summer break and get it looked at, because the summer break was 6 weeks or 5 weeks, sorry. And come Assen, which was the last weekend right before summer break, I go, and on Friday FP1, FP2, it was the worst day I ever had with arm pump by far in my entire career. It was so bad I couldn't even finish free practice, and my arm was just like this, stuck. And I said, that was the moment when I still remember coming into pits and I said, something's wrong. Like, something is wrong with me. I need to get checked. There's no way that I got the surgery, I do all this physical work. I have physios, I do my warmups, I do my recoveries, I do massage, I do everything. And I just got the worst arm pump ever. Something's wrong. So I go to get checked up by the doctors. They're in the MotoGP doctors, and they do an ultrasound. And what's funny is I got opened up, so you can see the scars pretty well. You can't really see, it's going crazy with the camera, but whatever, you can see right there. Yeah. It's a pretty big scar. Mm-hmm. Right over the scar, it was like really hard, and I didn't understand why, but I just thought that, okay, you know, I got the surgery, and so it's just hard because it's, you know, maybe they you know, I have a tendon or whatever. I didn't know any better. And also the massage therapist never really said too much, but I go in there. I tell them what's going on, tell them how I feel. They start doing the ultrasound, and as they're doing it, they're going right over the scar, right over where it's really, really hard also. And I'm like, hey, like, I just want to know also, like, why do you think it's so hard? Like right there, it just feels like a thick band. And no joke, like, he goes and he just stays quiet for about 20 seconds. And he looks up at me and he's like, dude, you have a big problem here. Oh. I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, that thick band should not be there. And I'm like, I'm as you can imagine, I'm super confused. Right? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what is that? He's like, that's all scar tissue and it does not look good. I'm like, okay. Oh, so what does this mean? And he's like, your arm pump is there because your arm is worse than it was before. Like, you have a piece of scar tissue this big inside of you right now. And I'm like, okay, so what do I need to do? And they're like, you need to open your arm again, take all that out. But I have no guarantee that that's not going to come right back. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then that's where, as you can imagine, the feelings start to get a little, you know, the heart started going a little bit crazy and the thoughts started going all over the place. And it was super scary because I didn't know if my arm was going to be fine until I finished my therapy 8 weeks after that, or let's say 6 or 7 weeks after that. So for 6 or 7 weeks, I was pretty scared. Concerned, pretty scared. Yeah. And again, like at that point, it was just, you know, one thing is not knowing if I'll be able to race the rest of the season. Another thing is not knowing if I'll be able to ever race again. And again, like, you know, okay, you know, in general, arm pump doesn't sound like such a crazy thing, but for how bad I got it and for how bad of a scar, you know, a scar tissue issue I had, if that kept coming back every 2 months, I can't open my arm every 2 months just to take out scar tissue. So, right.
You just need a zipper.
I just need a zipper. There you go. Yeah. So I ended up finding, anyways, I don't want to ramble too much about it, but I ended up, they got me connected with one of their surgeons in Madrid, which is, you know, it's only 4-hour drive from where I was living in Barcelona. I had a couple meetings with him and he told me that he had was quite confident with his plan. I actually had to undergo some radiotherapy on my arm to stop the cell growth because my issue was that when they opened up my arm, they cut the cartilage. They cut the fascia, and that fascia goes open. They cut they stitch your skin up, and then your muscle just has all the room and it needs, and you're good. What happened is when they did that to me, my body went, oh, your fascia's open, let's close it. And they, and my body closed it, but it's obviously it didn't close it with a little thin line. It closed it with a bulk this big. So what they ended up doing was I did 3 sessions of radiotherapy on my arm to stop that the cells from growing, from reacting so crazily. I was with medication for 3 weeks. That also stopped so much cell growth, so much collagen growth. And then apart from that, I had to have a wrist brace on my arm for 6 weeks. Mm. So yeah, it was long, but at the end I was able to go get through it. My arm felt amazing after. I slowly, very slowly got into my Sean, what's going on over there?
Sean, you okay?
I'm sorry, guys. I apologize.
It's okay. You got red like a tomato.
Let me just do some. Pam, keys to the car are right there on the side. Can you guys hold on a minute?
Yeah. That was great. Oh, man. Poor Sean's had a rough go of it of late.
I love it.
I'm sorry.
Don't worry, Sean.
I'm sorry. I'm a happy-go-lucky.
Don't worry. I'll charge extra. I'll charge extra for the last minute.
Anyway, so is it?
I'm sorry.
You did those races at the end of the year. And it's good.
It's perfect. It's the best I ever felt. So I'm very happy. I'm ready to go.
All right. Well, let's fast forward a little bit to what we've got coming up here.
Paul, can I ask? I'm sorry. Because I was listening, Sean, to everything you said. I have a couple questions about the surgery because we've had so many people that get it. Some riders don't want to do it. I'll tell you, Matthew Scholtz, he claims, you know, he worries about that. So he tries to manage it. It's hard to manage. I see him all the time dealing with therapy on it. You pointed out something that I've always wondered about. It's the fascia. So they cut it so that you got more room in there. So I always wondered if they cut it, it could grow back together. Why don't they, I guess they can't remove it completely.
So it's interesting you say that. There's, I've heard different things. One of the things I've heard is they can remove it entirely, but it could just make the problem worse because your body's going to want to grow it back entirely. Whereas if you just cut it in one spot and it splits open, your body's okay with that. Obviously my body wasn't because of the way my body reacted. So that's a different, you know, that's that. I'm different. Don't count me in. But I think majority of the people do need to get it opened up or checked up every handful of years, you know?
Okay.
Which is not ideal anyways. Like even if it's 5 years, like opening up your arm every 5 years isn't great. But yeah, I don't know. From what I've learned is I wish I would have known the first time that I should have rested the arm a lot more the first surgery. Obviously now I know how my body reacts. Now I know that my body has a tendency to scar up very aggressively. I keloid very easily on my arms, on the exterior. You guys are going to see this year. So now I know. I didn't know before that. But also, it does make a difference. Now I'm seeing a lot of the GP riders, which, you know, GP riders are getting it more and more and more often as well. And now doctors are starting to realize it's not good. Even though you can get the surgery and ride a week later, it's not good for you. If you get the surgery, just don't do anything for 3-4 weeks. Like the more you wait, the better, because your body won't react in a bad way and it'll let it settle. That's happened to a handful of riders that I learned from. So that's what I would tell the people that are looking into it, is just get the surgery, but then just chill.
Okay. So Paul, the last thing I want to ask Sean, I want you to be completely honest with this, Sean, because I will tell you, for myself, and you saw some emotion here earlier for me on something else, but listen, I would have been in tears. You had to have been in tears. You couldn't have been just, I'm so down in the dumps. You had to feel like your career was ending, and how did you get through that emotional low? I mean, just the fact that it would have destroyed my life, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, people don't understand well what I went through, but yeah, I did. I had tough days. I cried. I didn't feel good. I didn't know what was going on. Like honestly, my parents, my sister, my girlfriend, Gabby, like they got me through it. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have been able to. Like they were there for me, even though it was at distance a lot of the time. They were there for me. Like, and if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have had the power to keep going, because, it was scary though. Like I even had one conversation with my dad where, you know, he was like, "Hey dude, like, don't worry. Like if this doesn't work out, like this isn't the end of the world, you know, like you've already had a privileged career and life goes on. Like you'll be able to do this, you'll be able to do that." And like, man, I just remember like, yeah, he's right. But I just remembered, like, it was amazing to see how accepting my dad was of that. Cause at the end of the day, like we got here together, but it also like fucking broke me when I heard that, like, holy shit, like, is this a reality? Like this actually might happen, you know? So yeah, it sucked for some time, but again, I tried to stay as positive as I could, and not think too much of the result, just kind of go more day by day. As hard as that was, I just had to go day by day. And I had moments where I was getting backtracked from the surgeons where they were telling me, "Hey dude, like, you need to wait some more days. This isn't looking too good right now. You got to keep waiting." And like, that is like, you just need to focus day by day by day. And yeah, it was worth it at the end.
You're still healing now though, aren't you? I mean, the healing process isn't done, I assume.
So I would say the healing is done, but I'm just now getting back to like the last month. I got back to my full training schedule. Because as you can imagine, I didn't get back to my full training right away after that. Well, at all for a couple months. So I just now in the last month got back to my full training, my normal training schedule, and my arm, like between not doing anything for 6 weeks and between the radiotherapy, it got quite small and quite weak. So I felt fine racing. I felt fine on the Moto 2. I didn't have any issues at all. But when I put the full training impact, motocross, gym, and stacking this on like my normal training, I felt like I need a lot of therapy, a lot of self-care, massage, all this stuff. I need a lot of that recovery time. So that's the main point that I'm at right now, is I'm just really just trying to take care of it. But the healing is done. Like the surgeons already told me, dude, like you're done. There's zero sign of scar tissue. There's zero problem. You're good. Just train, load, and recovery. So it's good.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Now all right. Let's move forward. Sorry, Paul. I needed to get into
that. That's okay. Okay. So at the press release, it said it made it sound like there was going to be a couple of bikes, at least from the team at Daytona. Are you on one of those? No. Okay. All right. I thought maybe they'd throw a bike under you and let you do the Daytona 200 since you almost won it once. Or did you win it? Did you win it, or you're close?
No, don't tell me that. I got close luck. I got the trophy right in front of me, damn it. Right here. That says P2, not P1.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, at least you kept it, Sean. We're glad you kept it anyway.
Of course. No, I've got my pole position. I've got two pole position helmets and two P2s. So I have a decent record at Daytona, but I need that P1. But no, the team is quite focused on the superbike program right now. Obviously they've got 8 bikes planned, so it's big. So I think they have a lot to worry about. But I think adding in a 200 right now is a lot to put on the table. That doesn't mean that I won't do the 200. I actually don't have anything secured right now. So we're going to see what we can talk about and arrange. So we'll see about that.
Okay, so going in, let's say your season's going to start at Road Atlanta and you're going to be on a superbike for the first time, other than whatever testing you get done. What part of that makes you nervous?
I'm just excited.
That's good. That's good. Good. I mean,
I'm just excited.
What do you think's the hardest part? Getting yourself up to speed on the bike or the competition?
I think my thing will be adapting to the superbike. I want to adapt as fast as I can. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm talking a lot with the team to have the right people around me, because the better people I have around me, the easier or the faster I'll be able to adapt on that bike. So I think that, I'm aware of the competition. I'm aware of the step. I'm aware of everything I have to learn. But I'm also not scared, right? I've jumped into the deep end plenty of times already. So,
right.
I'm not scared. I'm just excited for this opportunity. I know, I have a few months, to focus on myself. I know what to work on. And like I said, I've already started to get my feet wet with the Stock 1000. We hope to have the superbikes really soon, and yeah, it's putting 100% out there, and we're going out there to win. So that's going to be the goal.
It's also kind of cool because Richie Escalante started to do really well last year. It took him a year or whatever to get going, to get up to speed, and now he's like a factor, right? I mean, he got on the podium. Yeah. It makes me think about those great battles that you guys had in super sport. So it's kind of cool if you get to get out there again and race with Richie a bit.
Of course. No, this went out, the post went out yesterday, and I've already had a bunch of people like send me messages and even tell me today I was running around and some people talking to me, some comments, just everything saying, oh, like you and Richie are back on the same grid. And that's super exciting. Like I think that Richie and I had made one of the best seasons ever, in not just in super sport, but in, I think in Motor America in general. And
yeah,
and so I think it's exciting for not just for me and for Richie that, you know, we have a great relationship and, some amazing memories. I think we're both excited to be on track and hopefully have some fun battles, some good battles up front, but also for the fans. You know, I think it's going to be good for everyone that knows this, you know, this this battle that we've had together for a couple seasons, and now that we're both going to be on the top class, I think it's exciting for everyone.
Yeah, we'll make a rivalry out of it, and that people know how much you hate each other and stuff. So it should be good.
That's right.
Hey, I'm saying, you know, we love each other, and you know, there's a lot of respect. But during the season, it always gets a little feisty. So don't worry about it.
That press conference at Ridge, I'll never forget that. That we got into that whole thing about displacement and all that. It was a crazy time period. You know, Sean, I want to tell you something. So Paul will underscore this. I constantly, like, we talk about a rider, I'll go, I love that guy. And Paul always says, you love every rider. And it's true, I do. But I had mixed feelings about you going to Moto2. And it's not because I didn't want you to do it, because obviously, you know, it's a goal and it's something you need to do. But man, it would have been so cool if you moved up to Superbike. However, I will say this. I think Moto2 is a hell of a training ground for Moto America Superbike. And I'll never forget, Ben Bostrom told me this years ago about World Superbike. So he said, when you're in the World Championship, every single session, every lap counts. You have to be fast. And I remember Cameron said early on, he would kind of, at a start, he'd sort of lay back and, you know, see who was where they were and then move up from there. Well, he doesn't do that anymore. And Jake Gagne knows not to do that. And I know with Moto2, with what you've done, you have to be on all the time. So I'm sure it's going to help you this year with the idea that once you jump in there and you, from every practice, free practice, all the qualifying, you got to be at the top of your game all the time. Is that true?
You have to be, excuse my language, you got to be hauling ass from pit exit. Like, it's incredible. I mean, especially when you're learning every weekend, you're learning a new track and you're still learning, you're still trying to learn and adapt to a bike. That is, in particular, that Moto2 bike, it doesn't work if you're not pushing it. It's so stiff that if you're not pushing that bike, you're not understanding it. So you literally need to be pushing from, I'd say, give it two corners just to scrub a little bit the right, scrub a little bit the left, and then you're pushing. Like, you're pushing, you're going, you're pushing. And yeah, at the beginning, you know, that pushing feels like you're pushing, but you're not actually, you know, it's not coming out of you. But at the end, yeah, you spend a couple seasons there and you start picking up on all these things. And that's exactly how it is. Especially because of the way that the system works, with the whole Q1, Q2 thing. They base your lap times off of the free practice sessions, and sometimes based off of weather, FP2, you know, is going to be slower, which means sometimes FP1, like FP3 is the first qualifying, which means FP1, you need to set yourself up for FP3. So that means FP1, people are doing lap records.
Yeah.
Like 10 laps in. Right. So you don't do a lap record if you're not pushing from lap one.
So moving back into Moto America Superbike, you're going to be hauling ass right from pit out, and you're just going to be doing that because that's what you've developed, and it's obviously going to help you, right? I mean, clearly.
Yeah, I think in particular for me now, going into this this new chapter, learning the Superbike, and like I said, if you want to learn a bike, you need to be pushing, right? Slow laps doesn't teach you anything, and it also doesn't give any good information to the engineers. So the more amount of fast laps you have, the better it is for everyone. And I think that is a little bit now just in the system for me.
He's only got two tracks to learn, right? Mid-Ohio and Brainerd. You didn't go to Brainerd, right?
I went to Brainerd.
Oh, you did the first year.
I did. Yeah.
So all you have is Mid-Ohio to learn.
There you go.
Easy.
You'll love that track. You'll love that track, Sean. What was your favorite track in Moto when you're racing in Moto2? What one did you like the best?
Phillip Island.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, that's just because Paul's Australian. That's all.
Well, no, it's everybody's favorite.
That's what I was going to say is I went into Phillip Island kind of like, okay, like everyone says that this place is, you know, best track in the world and all this. And then as soon as I finished FP1, I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get it.
It's man, fun.
That track is incredible. Like just location. It is scary when it rains and it gets windy. It is super scary because it is wild. But as a track, it is incredible.
Wow. I thought you were going to say the wind, the rain, and the seagulls. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of things to worry about it at that.
There is. Yeah, the wildlife is fantastic, but it's okay. I'm used to alligators, so I'm not scared.
There you go.
And okay, what track are you looking forward to be coming back and racing at the most in Moto America?
Laguna, 100%.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I love that place.
Yeah, understood. Yeah. The team Top Pro Motorsports, I'm pretty sure Alex and Augustin are both based in Florida. Is that, that's not a coincidence that you're in Florida and you got involved with that team, right? I mean, there's got to be some connection there, or at least they know of you from that.
Yeah, of course. I've known Alex, or better yet, Alex has known me since I started racing, since I was 5 years old. So we've known each other for forever now. And, you know, Top Pro Motorsports is Alex's dealership. Top Pro Racing Team is now what they named the team. So I was actually into the dealership, into Top Pro Motorsports, last year, like I think around this time, or even January, maybe of this year, I was into his shop. Like, I don't know what I had to go do, but I just went to talk to him and I was just hanging out. And if you would have told me then that, right, you know, a year later I'd be signed up to his superbike program for this coming season, I'd be like, dude, like that is the wildest thing ever. And here I am. I will honestly say, and I told this to Alex, I'm like, it came out of the blue. I did not expect it whatsoever. When we started talking, I don't know the time frame, but you know, a month and a half ago, I was looking hard at my options for next year. I was looking a lot at Europe, but I was also looking at coming back here, and I was just kind of looking at all my options and pushing around. But I'll be honest, my situation for Europe was hard. Like, there's a lot of riders paying a lot of money to be there, and that, unfortunately, I don't have money, don't have sponsors. I have sponsors that support me in my racing and my career, but not sponsors that are willing to pay $200,000 to race in Moto2, right? So that wasn't even, it just doesn't make sense. So I had to start looking at all the options, and yeah, out of nowhere, one, I got a phone call. Well, actually, I will be honest, Alex was bugging me for some time, a handful of messages. But I didn't know why he was texting me so much. And then one day I just decided to call him. I'm like, okay, like I'll just call him, see what he's on about. and yeah, he's like, hey man, like, I know this is a long shot, but, I'm making a superbike team for next year. And as you can imagine, there, I was like, okay, like, what's this guy going on about, you know? And, but no, I mean, it was a lot of long phone calls after that. And man, like, I have zero doubt in what's going on, for next year. And, I'm excited. I'm happy that, you know, he's put in a lot of effort into this and it's looking good. Again, the partnership with BMW and Alpha is huge. And so, it ended up playing out in a good way. And just to finish it off and like kind of do the loop to your question, there's nothing better than to be a Florida guy,
yes,
and be racing for a team that's literally 30, 40 minutes away from me. Right. I think it's great for me, for him, for sponsors. It's fantastic. So, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Florida connection. And like I said, I remember when when Alex and Augustine came in, and I knew they were on BMWs because we, like I said, we look at the entry list. And so it was not a surprise when I heard the rumor that you were going to be racing for that team, that you'd be on a BMW. But this, where the surprise happened to me is the size of what that team's going to be this year and what they're planning. Yeah. So I'm really excited about that and what it means for our entire paddock. I mean, obviously that's huge for all of us. You touched on sponsors for a minute. I want to bring up a sponsor. You got it on your hat. So Fresh and Lean is still a sponsor of yours, and it's going to continue into 2024, I'm sure. Is it a sponsor for you personally? Will you have Fresh and Lean on your helmet, your leathers, but maybe not on the bike or with the team? I mean, where is that sponsorship going with you?
So I actually, maybe I'll use what you just said, and I'll use this footage right now to put some pressure into them to do something for next year.
There you go.
Into Thomas from Fresh and Lean. I'll send this over. So actually I haven't had the chance. We haven't had the chance to talk about next season just yet, even though it's almost 2024, but, we've both had a lot going on, and, we haven't talked about it. So I do hope so. They've been, you know, I've been working with Fresh and Lean now since 2020, and honestly, they've been huge for me and for my program. Like, I'll be honest, I've only had three full-on sponsors the last two seasons. And they were the ones that were helping me live, train, eat over there overseas, and made everything happen. And one of these, you know, Fresh and Lean being one of them. So extremely grateful for that. And yeah, I don't know exactly what's the deal for next year. But I just hope to have them with me. You guys already know, as I had it in Moto America, I had it the same in Moto 2, that, you know, I've been branding them completely on the helmet. So that's been fun. And I hope that it continues like that for next year.
Okay, Sean, we're close to wrapping up here.
Yeah, I know we're getting ready to wrap. I mean, God, I had to give the keys to my wife. I had to let my dog out once. I mean, I don't know what's going on. It's like, Sean, I don't know, but I mean, it's really
going to be, it's going to be called Off Track with Carruthers in an Empty Freaking Chair.
Yeah, I know.
That should just be the screenshot, just a screenshot of him just be doing nothing, you know?
What an idiot. I mean, I'm just an idiot. But Sean, I mean, what you've done in our paddock, you know, coming up through, and even, I mean, we knew about you when you were pretty young. I mean, I joked about back when you had longer hair, but, you know, obviously Red Bull rookies and all that. I mean, you've been racing for a long time. You've got huge experience. So, I mean, and you're only 21. So
that's the part I can't believe. I'm going to see his ID.
It's incredible. It's incredible. I mean, it really is. And so, Sean, you're going to race in Superbike. I mean, we'll see what happens, you know. Couple of years, we'll see. What, you know, you are still young, and okay, you could go back to World Superbike. You could go to MotoGP, because I know how they are about Moto2 to MotoGP. I don't necessarily think Moto2 translates to MotoGP very well. Do you?
If you're up front and winning constantly, like the last couple guys have, yes. But in terms of bike,
right,
every step is going to be a big step onto a MotoGP bike, in my opinion. I think what Moto2 teaches you more than bike, the bike is always going to be different no matter where you jump from. It's just the level, right? The level of attention, the level of just being that guy, like Acosta, right? He's coming from a Moto2 bike, but he's Acosta. Everyone knows he's going to be fast in the MotoGP bike. So, but it's for that reason. If you're there in Moto2, you're going to be there in MotoGP.
Sean, why are you trying to get rid of him to some other series already? We just got him back.
Well, I don't want him to ever leave, honestly, because like I said, I didn't want him to go over to Moto2, but I'm just saying, man, he's got so many years ahead of him. And I'm glad that things have worked out a little bit better with your arm situation. Cause to your point, you got so much racing ahead of you. So, I mean, I don't want to get rid of him, but by the same token, I mean, I don't think the door has not closed to a world championship. We all know that with you. We know your talent.
Yeah.
So
no, and
you're going to keep your eyes open.
I appreciate that. And at the end of the day, that was also, as you can imagine, one of the things that did go through my head, right? Because it wasn't easy also having to pack everything up again and have to come back home and have to be like, okay, my Moto2 just ended here and we're going back home, right? But again, that's not the end, right? There's still so much to go. I don't know if I'm going to be here for 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, 4 years. I don't know how long I'm going to be here for. I don't know what opportunity I'll get here, there, wherever it is. I don't know. I'm not stressed about it either, because I'm just excited for what I've got going on right now. I'm focused on doing my 100%. And I know that my, given everything I've got will bring the results, and the results will bring everything else that it's got to bring. So, that's why I'm grateful for what I have right now. And I can't wait to get started.
Yeah. Just one more, Paul, just one more for me. Go ahead. I saw. Okay.
No, you go. Okay,
real quick. So Cameron, I think Paul knows about this better than I do. You know, we've asked Cameron like who he was closest to in the paddock in Moto 2. And I think he said Jake Dixon. Isn't it Jake Dixon, Paul, that he.
Yeah. I think they're friendly. Yeah.
He's super close. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So Sean, who was your guy in the Moto 2 paddock?
So I was actually really cool with Rory this year, Rory Skinner, my teammate. Well, okay. At the beginning of the year. we actually ended up building a really cool relationship, and we had really good times. We spent times together in Cali at the beginning of the year, and we had fun. The other paddock guy is Moto 3 guy, Chavi Artigas. He's a super cool. I raced with him in Rookies Cup a couple years, and he's done podiums in Moto 3, so he's freaking legit. Spanish guy, but I don't know why, but we just have a great relationship, and he was probably one of the only real guys I spoke to. So it's always important, like, as serious as that game is and as little friends as you really do have there, it's nice to always have those one or two to be able to, you know, have some fun with and screw around with.
Yeah, I get it. Okay.
You're good, Sean. And Sean,
for now, I'm satisfied.
Now I have you two to fuck around with. Sorry.
Well, yeah. it's okay.
Language I was gonna say, I mean, you know how friendly and everybody is in our paddock. So, you know, obviously you'll get back into all, you know, hanging out with all the riders and staff like us and everybody else. So it's gonna be
I'm
great.
Excited.
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you.
And we won't wait another 4 years before having you on.
Right. Let's not. Right.
I'm cool with that. I'll be here.
All right. You guys, thanks all a right. lot. And all of you,
likewise.
Both of you have a good holiday. Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Stay high to the family.
Ciao. Thank you. Bye.